Good evening, and thank you for joining Congressman Don Beyer for his fourth telephone town hall to share information and updates about the COVID-19 pandemic. At any time, you can press *3 to enter the queue to ask a question. Congressman Beyer represents Northern Virginia in Congress, and input from his constituents is crucial to him as he talks with his colleagues about future legislation to address this crisis. You all know how important a topic this is, so let's go to the Congressman now to give a quick introduction, and then we'll hear from all of our featured speakers. Congressman?
Erica, thank you, and thanks again for moderating us. And this, by the way, is just our fourth telephone town hall during the pandemic. Obviously, we're going to do many, many, many more over the years. So I am Don Beyer, your congressman in Northern Virginia, and we're specifically hosting this conversation tonight to discuss COVID-19, the pandemic, and the response. But relevant to that, and before I get into that, I want to welcome, we have three special guest speakers that joined us tonight to talk to you and to help answer your questions. So let me introduce them in turn. First, we'll hear from Dr. Megan Healy. Megan is Virginia's chief workforce advisor to Governor Northam. So she has been the absolute center of the Virginia storm on workforce, on unemployment insurance, and getting people back to work, on trying to help people. So we greatly rely on her. She's done a terrific job in a very difficult time. So Dr. Healy, thank you for joining us, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you so much, Congressman, and thank you so much for your leadership. We could not have done it without you. You know, it's nice that I work for Governor Northam and think about all things workforce. We know the health and safety of Virginians is their top priority, but after this is over, and hopefully it will be over, we might be moving into what is a second phase, which could be an economic crisis. And so in my role is I look at all things health, workforce, and specifically we're looking at healthcare workforce shortages, which we have in long-term care facilities as well as in our hospitals and working on that issue. I also do workplace safety, and so if we still have workers on the job, an essential job, we want to make sure that they are safe and following guidelines. But more importantly, during this COVID-19 response, is I'm working with the Employment Commission as an agency that's tucked in my secretariat, and we're trying to make sure that even though people are scared of the health concerns, we want to make sure that they have food on their table and they can pay their rent, and that we're trying to develop better processes for people to apply for unemployment. And I really appreciate the congressman and his leadership that we can actually increase eligibility of unemployment to many people we've never done before, and it's really helpful to make sure that people stay home and that might not be at their workplace, that they're safe, but they're also economically safe. So thank you, Congressman.
Absolutely, Megan, and so much for being with us. And then next we have Mr. Antonio Doss. Antonio is the District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration's Washington Metropolitan Area District Office. So he personally was responsible for handing out $350 billion in the last couple of weeks. He's run out of money, but we're going to replace a lot more tomorrow. So, Antonio, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Congressman Beyer. What a sight that would be if I could have done that on my own. So the Small Business Administration, of course, we've been administering the Paycheck Protection Program, which is a key component of the CARES Act. And as the congressman said, we've put out more money in 2 weeks than we probably have put out in at least a dozen or 14 years, all combined. So we're looking forward to the opportunity to be able to provide more funds under the Paycheck Protection Program, which is really designed to make sure we're helping people stay employed with their small businesses and not have to, to miss a paycheck. The other element that we've been funding is our economic injury disaster loans, similarly purposed to help make sure that businesses have their working capital needs met for payroll, for lease expenses, for other regular expenses that they have, including paying suppliers and such. So both of those we expect to be backed up on the board as the votes come in tomorrow and President signs the bill. The piece that is still actually available right now and is a little bit less heralded than the PPP program is we have something called a Small Business Debt Relief Program. So if you're a business owner that has an existing SBA 7A, 504 microloan, the agency through the CARES Act funding is going to pay your principal, interest, and fees for the next 6 months. Similarly, if you're in an expansion mode or you're getting ready to get an SBA loan for some program other than our disaster-related situations right now with the pandemic, we're also going to pay the first 6 months of your principal, interest, and fees associated with your new 7A SBA 504 or microloan. So I look forward to the Q&A period, but that's a quick update of some of the major funding programs and where they stand right now.
Mr. Dahl, thank you very much. That's terrific. And then finally, Mr. Kevin McGowan is the Assistant Regional Census Manager at the Philadelphia Regional Census Center of the U.S. Census Bureau. And as you know, the Constitution mandates a census every 10 years. It's 2020, and the coronavirus has confused things more than a little. But Kevin's calling in from the city of brotherly love to give us a perspective on that. So, Kevin, the floor is yours.
Thanks. I'm Kevin McGowan. I'm a regional manager from the Philadelphia Regional Census Center. The Philadelphia Regional Census Center covers 8 states in addition to Washington, D.C. for support of the 2020 decennial census. I'd like to thank Congressman Beyer and his office for allowing me to speak briefly on the 2020 census. The 2020 census shapes decisions about how billions of dollars in federal funds flow into communities each year for the next 10 years. Some of the funding goes to health care, schools and education programs, roads and bridges, emergency services, and many other things. Responding to the 2020 census is easy, safe, and important. The Census Bureau provides three options to self-respond. The easiest way to respond is online at 2020census.gov. You also have the option to respond by telephone at 844-330-2020. That is 844-330-2020. And the third option is responding by paper form. If you have not responded yet and you have not received the paper form in the mail, you should be receiving it within the next couple of weeks. And even if you receive a paper form, you can still self-respond online or by phone. But no matter which option you choose, your responses are safe and secure. I kind of want to get into the response rate now. So the Census Bureau has launched an interactive map that allows you to track self-response to the 2020 census. This map includes response rates from households that responded online, by phone, or by mail. This map can be found at 2020census.gov/response-rates. And this map is updated daily with response rates and includes various geographies. You can also view the response rates by ranking. So if you go to the rankings page, you'll have the states ranked, the cities, and also counties that show their response rates. We encourage you to engage with your community about the 2020 census and its importance. Currently, the national self-response rate is 51%, while Virginia's response rate is 56%. The 8th Congressional District of Virginia, their response rate is at 60.7%. Obviously, that is higher than the national average and also Virginia's average as well. And it also ranks higher than most congressional districts within Virginia. A large part of this is Congressman Beyer and his office and the partnership we have with them. Congressman Beyer did a Twitter PSA promoting the census, and he also posted on his Instagram page the importance of responding to the census. If you're really into data analysis, this is a neat tool to kind of dive into some census data. And even if you're not, I recommend going to it. It's a good way to kill a few minutes and learn about census. As I said before, I highly encourage everyone to self-respond if you have not yet. Also, please encourage your friends to. And as I said before, you can reply by internet, phone, or paper form. And lastly, I'll just talk about some operational changes in our timeline we have. The self-response time has been pushed back to the end of October. So you will have until the end of October to self-respond. And the non-response follow-up project, where we actually send enumerators to enumerate people who have not self-responded, will start in the middle of August. So that's for all my updates. Thank you.
Kevin, thank you very much. As you can tell, we have a very distinguished group here tonight, and I'm not surprised that we're among the highest in the country. We have the best congressional district in the country. We're the second most educated, which I'm very proud of. only behind Upper East Side New York, but I am confident we will catch them soon. So before we turn to questions, I just want to give you a quick update on my office. We have 14 people who have been, we're looking for an alternative to the phrase drinking from a fire hose, but that's exactly what it's been like. Flooded with calls the last couple of weeks, literally hundreds of calls and emails every single day, and we're doing our best to get back to as many of you as we possibly can. And most of them, not surprisingly, are about unemployment insurance or assistance for small businesses, which is why we have Megan and Antonio and Kevin on this call. A quick PSA, we have a new page on our website with a bunch of resources. All of our staff came together, and there are, if you can't find it on the website, it might not exist. It's at buyer.house.gov/coronavirus. Most everything you should need. On the legislative front, I'll be voting tomorrow. We go in at 10 o'clock in person to pass the next phase of legislation. This is called the CARES 1.5 package. It's $484 billion more. We're giving $50 billion more to Kevin McGowan, actually to Antonio Doss, and the Small Business Administration for the economic injury disaster loans, and another $310 billion, I think, for the Paycheck Protection Plan. So, you know, both of those ran out of money. There are long waiting lists at most of the banks for these businesses, so we're hoping that will come right away. Some of you have been told over the last couple of days that this bill was held up by me or by Speaker Pelosi or by the Democrats. I tell you, nothing could be further from the truth. It's true that Mitch McConnell has been spinning that for a week, but his bill had no support in the Senate, much less in the House. It didn't fund the disaster loan program. It didn't fund hospitals or testing. And finally, though, over the weekend, he started to talk to Leader Pelosi, and we got this bipartisan bill. And I did it. It passed the Senate unanimously yesterday. It should be almost unanimous tomorrow. It doesn't have everything I'd like. There's still much more we need to do, especially for state and local governments, which have enormous budget holes. Just the city of Alexandria, a district, anticipating a $100 million hole in their budget, in a budget of $800 million. So I'm hoping that the next bill will address state and local governments, will address the Postal Service, which badly needs it, and also to set up mail-in voting, and I'll be pushing for all those. And in addition, of course, we're still very much worried about testing and PPE, the protective equipment. I'm now the vice chair of the Joint Economic Committee, and we've been talking to economist after economist, and everyone I've talked to has said that you cannot get the economy back on track unless we first handle the virus. If we don't stop the spread of the virus, any attempt to open up the economy is just going to make it close it down again faster. We all will remember, we read that back in the flu pandemic of 1918-1919, more died in the second and third waves than in the first. So I encourage you to wash your hands. Don't go out unless you have to. If you do go out, wear a face covering or a mask or a bandana. I presided over the House last week with a face mask my daughter made. It's the most press I've gotten in a couple of years. Whatever. And one more thing that I expect many of you may ask about that's not going to help the spread of the virus is the President's announcement of an immigration ban. He seems to have rolled it back in the last couple of hours to deny green cards for the next 60 days. But we don't want to be blaming immigrants. In fact, one quarter of the healthcare workers in America today are immigrants. So we are more dependent on them now than we've ever been before. And lastly, today is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And a lot of people keep saying, by the way, I think there's so many articles out there right now about how the air is cleaner than it's been in a long time, how many lives may be saved from the absence of particulate matter. There's a reason that oil was selling for negative $20 a barrel in the last couple of days. But one of the things that shows up again and again is the people who get saying, including the President, nobody could have predicted this pandemic. Well, yeah, there have been stories in The Atlantic and The New Yorker, the movies. Just watch Contagion again. There's a lot of people that were predicting it but didn't have the final say on public policy. We need to be alert to the other things in our lives that we say, well, nobody could have predicted it, like climate change, that no one's addressing, or we certainly aren't doing enough. So hopefully we'll learn from this pandemic that prevention and investment and thinking long-term about the future is by far the best way to lead and to get by. So I will stop, and Erica, you are on board to channel questions to our distinguished panelists and me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I just want to remind everyone again, you can press *3 on your telephone keypad at any time if you would like to enter the queue and ask the congressman or his panel. So with that, let's go to our first caller. We have Stacy. She is from Church. Stacy, you are live with Congressman Beyer. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, everyone. I appreciate this opportunity, and I was hoping to get some clarification on the best way to utilize unemployment. Specifically, I have a small business in Virginia, but I also work part-time as an employee in a side part-time job. And so when the COVID-19 situation came up, I applied for unemployment, and that was listing both my part-time employment as well as my business. And so I was initially granted unemployment for my part-time job and not my business. And then as time went on, I was able to take a couple of clients here and there, telehealth clients here and there, but it didn't quite make up more than the weekly benefits. And so now I'm not really clear if I should be filing partial unemployment and what the policy is for doing that. And then once the business owner unemployment opened up a couple of days ago, I applied for that as well. So I just wanted to get some direction as far as how I should do that properly.
Stacy, great question. Let me kick that to Dr. Healy first.
Sure.
Yes, that is a great question. So if you had a part-time job, you're probably getting partial unemployment benefits. And now with the expansion due to the CARES Act, we have the additional $600 per week added to your weekly benefit, which is top of $378. So if you are not getting that, the next step is for your business is to apply for the pandemic unemployment assistance. And we just opened that on Saturday. We've had over 40,000 people already move through that system, which is really good news. It's a brand new system we built from scratch in 2 weeks. So it has some kinks, but we're working through that. And so there's a portal. So if you go on to vec.virginia.gov, it's a blue bar across the website. It says apply for pandemic unemployment assistance. And then try doing that so at least you get your probably full benefits, which would be about $978 per week up until July 31st.
And Meg, you can't do both PPP and unemployment insurance, can you? Or is that possible?
We can ask a small business person that, but your PPP grant, your loan to grant, based off of how percentage of people you're keeping on your payroll? So that's a good question I would ask a small business person just for clarification, because I know some people are doing what's your payroll at the beginning and what does it look like at the end for the PPP, even if some people are doing a combination of both.
Mr. Antonio, so it's a very intricate question, as I'm glad it came up early. The PPP program is, as Dr. Healy was just saying, is really about keeping people paid on your payroll. It's available to sole proprietors and people who don't have a lot of employees. However, in some cases, we find that the economic injury disaster loans are actually a little bit more beneficial because your funding is based on a percentage of your gross profit as opposed to whatever your salary and net earnings are, and your usage of those funds can be a little bit more broad. PPP, you've got to pay it back related to keeping people on the payroll, so, and it has to be at least 75% directed towards payroll-related expenses. So it may be that the economic injury loan program might benefit you a little bit more at this particular time. But if you got more questions on it, you know, you can feel free to reach out to our office or any of our resource partners at the Small Business Development Center, SCORE, Women's Business Centers. We're all here to help and provide some additional support to you.
Thank you. Sure. And Stacy, by the way, on that, the $50 billion that's put in for the economic disaster loan that Antonio was just mentioning, because banks can leverage it, it's actually $350 billion, or a quarter of a trillion dollars for these loans. So those should be available for a long time to come. Erica?
Wonderful. Let's go to Sally next. She's in Lorton. Sally, you're live. Go ahead and ask your question. Sally from Lorton, are you there? All right, let's go to our next caller. We have Carol. Carol, you are now live. You can go ahead and ask your question. Carol?
Hi, Congressman, and thank you very, very much for all your support. My question is very, very similar to Stacey's, but it's, I have a little bit of a different spin on it because I've been in contact with the DEC. I'm self-employed. I've owned a company for 22 years, and then it had to close down. And similar to Stacey, I had a part-time job, and it too is all, everything's closed down, so I'm not getting any income. I called the DEC, and they told me to file a claim and include both my self-employment and the part-time job. And just yesterday, I received a claim back from DEC that said that I cannot apply to the TUA program because I received some money from a part-time job in the past, and so all I can get is from the part-time job, which was 8 hours a week, and nothing could be retroactive or anything. And I called and disputed with the DEC, and I spoke to the person, and they said, no, that this is all I'm qualified for. And it seems that Dr. Healy said something different, but I don't know what to do now because they told me all the money that I made for my regular job would not be included or any benefits.
So, Dr. Healy, this sounds like it's perfect for you.
Yes, thank you. And that was a recent call about the pandemic unemployment assistance. We just launched that program this past weekend. So you recently talked to the VEC representative,
I talked to the VEC representative. Her name was Linda, and I talked to her. Today is Wednesday. I talked to her on Monday. Monday or yesterday. It was I received my notification on Monday, so I either talked to her Monday night or Tuesday, and it was for the small amount for that part-time job that I used to have, and I said, well, what about my regular company for 22 years, and she said, well, because you have this, you had one or the other, and I said, well, can I choose the other, and she said, no. This was my only choice, and it couldn't be retroactive, and it was only for 21 weeks.
Go ahead, Dr. Healy.
I think it's also there's so many different situations with the employment commission. We definitely want to make sure that you get the best benefit needed, and that's probably it sounds like if you're owned your own business, then you would get the full weekly benefit. What I can do is I can follow up with you, and so anyone on the call, if you have questions, you can call in, or if you have an email, let me follow up with your information, get one of my staff, and my email is workforce@governor.virginia.gov, so Virginia is spelled out, governor is spelled out, so it's workforce@governor.virginia.gov, and we can get a direct staff. We do have about 300-400 people at the call centers. And so sometimes with all this new guidance and it changes hourly, I swear the Employment Commission comes from the Department of Labor, so we'll try to get that cleared up.
And Carol, I also encourage you to call our district office. I'll put the number up in a minute, because Noah, Simon, and his team can also work with both SBA and VEC to help you. Thanks, Carol. We will track you down. Erica, on to you.
Great. Let's go to Pat. Pat is in Alexandria. Pat, go ahead and ask your question live.
Good evening, Congressman. Thank you for taking my question. I've heard reports that large companies have benefited from the payments that were intended for small businesses, and I'm curious as to how that happened. I would assume that the legislation contained a definition of small business that would exclude big companies, but that doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah, Pat, as we knew when we passed it 2 weeks ago, there would be unintended consequences. There would be people that we missed. There would be just things that we messed up. Like, we unfortunately, you know, we included nonprofits, but we left out nonprofit cemeteries, which I think we're going to try to fix next week. So they generally, it was designed to help small businesses, 500 and less. And if you were like a really big business and had just a bunch of different locations, you had to put all the locations together. The one thing they did, though, was they put an exception for restaurants and hotels, mostly because those were the two industries that were first hit the hardest. So you've seen the stories again and again about Ruth Chris Steakhouse getting two different $20 million loans. That clearly was not what was intended. So we're trying to clean that up in the bill that will pass tomorrow and then the more fuller version next week. But one other thing, not just the big businesses, what we found in this first huge crunch of money was that the medium-sized businesses that had, you know, 50 to 500 people generally had more relationships with their banks. They had big loans. They had good CPAs and lawyers, and they were the first to get in there and fill out the applications perfectly. The banks were also prioritizing. You know, people like even the community banks were saying, well, I'm going to help my long-term customer first. So the ones that really got left out were the small businesses. Businesses with 10 and less were really, really hurt in the first round. So in this new round that we'll approve tomorrow, the first $75 billion is specifically targeted to small businesses, women-owned, minority-owned, veteran-owned, rural, people that really missed the first round. And that was one of the things that we fought, the reason we didn't pass the bill on Sunday, was because Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans wanted to just keep it untethered, you know, wide open, which meant that the most privileged would be the ones that got the most money, rather than the people that need it most. Our sine qua non was making sure that there was a priority for the small businesses. So, Pat, thanks for the question, and I hope that gives you the overview on it.
Great. Erica? Thank you, Congressman. Let's go to Joanne. Joanne is in Arlington. Joanne, you're live with the Congressman. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, my question, because it's for someone who I'm trying to help apply for unemployment. She got a form letter from, she finally got through, she got a form letter and was asking her to list all the jobs that she's applying for in order to get the unemployment insurance. Now, granted, I haven't seen it because we're practicing social distancing, but is there a number she can call? I know that you gave a website or an email. I was unable to write it down because I'm not having a very good connection. I think the wind is causing that. But the bottom line is, how can we help people who are desperate to be granted unemployment? And that's my question.
Good question. Okay. Thank you, Joanne. Dr. Healy.
Yes. So most of the guidance we do have that we like to do it online is just easier because our call centers are hard to get through, and I appreciate everyone's patience. We actually have a capacity at 3,000 calls. At one time, and there's many times that we've hit that. We get over 10,000 emails a day. But I will say for our initial claims, you can call between 8:15 and 4:30 on through Monday through Friday or between 9 a.m. and 1 on Saturday. The phone number is 1-866-832-2363. And so I'm going to say it again. It's 1-866-832-2363, and that's to file initial claim. If you're already in the system and your claim's going through, we're trying to open up our phone lines for automation that you can type in your Social Security number, and every week you actually have to go onto the system if it's through a portal or through the phone to just say, yep, I'm still unemployed, please get my benefits. We do have a phone number for that as well. But any continuum of claims is 1-800-897-5630, and that's to continue to work on claims that have already been processed or close to being processed.
Megan, to the question about do you have to list every place you've applied for a job, does that make any sense? Well, unemployment is probably 15% right now, and we now look like tomorrow will be up to 24 million people that have been displaced in the last 4 weeks.
So we have waived the job search requirement, and so if somebody is on the old system that has been on unemployment a month before the COVID-19, they might still be in the system that has to show that you are searching for a job or well applying for jobs in the workforce system, but we have waived all those requirements currently. Just you're right, Congressman. This is not the time to find a new job when many businesses are temporarily closed. So if that's what the portal is saying to do, we have waived that requirement.
That's great. Thanks. Thanks, Megan. And Joanne, I hope that answers the question. If you have any problems, again, please get in touch with our district office, and we will try to help you or your friend get through this. Thank you, Erica.
Senator, thank you. Next,
on to our next question.
Let's go to Gina. Gina, you are live with Congressman Beyer. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question regarding testing. I wanted to know if somebody wanted to go in to be tested for COVID, what type of cost are they looking at for billing for the test? Do they have to refer to their insurance company, or is there a set fee that everyone's paying? Is it free? I know for myself, my insurance doesn't cover anything until the deductible is met. So during this dire and unique time that we're in, is there exceptions being made for people who are suffering from this virus?
Yeah, Gina, the great question. From the beginning, we have decided, as a matter of federal policy, that the test is free. So you should never have to pay for it. And this is across all platforms. You do still have to get a doctor's note to get it. And so, you know, hopefully you have that. But if you don't have, like, an established relationship with a physician, you can call to get that prescription. You can go by any of the community health centers, things like neighborhood health services or Arlington Free Clinic, or there's many, or any emergency room that you can go in there as long as you're symptomatic, and they will give you the test also for free. The thing we have not accomplished yet is free health care for people with coronavirus. And that has been one of our Democratic objectives since the beginning. We've tried to get it in every bill. We haven't yet, but we're not going to quit. Because the last thing we want is somebody to be deathly ill or even half ill with coronavirus and not get services because they could then well die, or they could be spreading it all kinds of different places, making other people sick. So that's the target goal. In the meantime, the testing is free. And by the way, the much is written about it. We are part of a number of different initiatives to get many more tests faster, easier. You know, the goal is 20 million tests per day, at least until the pandemic is over. And right now we are at a tiny, tiny fraction of that. Thank you, Gina. Erica, back to you.
All right. Next, let's go to Sasha. Dr. Sasha in Falls Church. You are live with the congressman.
Hi, congressman. Thank you very much. And I'm speaking on behalf of the Chinese Restaurant Association. Here's the problem. This is perhaps the most very reliable businessmen. They rarely deal with loans, and they always rely on their families. So they bank with the big banks for convenience. The problem is that when the PPP loan came in, they went to the big bank. The big bank, none of the big banks had the capacity to do it at that time, and they have no established relationship with any SBA lenders. So now, actually today, I called more than a dozen restaurant owners in Northern Virginia. None of them got the PPP loan. They are very anxious. And they are we are the first victim of this virus. And so I think Congress needs to address the problem.
Dr. Sasha, thank you very much. This is why the new funding was needed, because we ran out of all the earlier funding, as I mentioned, with the people that had these relationships. And now we'll have much more new money tomorrow. But let me also ask Antonio if he has a perspective from the SBA, especially for these small restaurants that weren't well banked.
Oh, yes. It's been a critical challenge, you know, clearly for certain pockets where banking relationships weren't prime in terms of business owner and business banker knowing one another. And one of the things that we did as part of our district office outreach was to recruit more banks to actually join into the SBA program. We had banks who were not very active or not active at all that signed up. But maybe more importantly now, in addition to the new arrangements that are pending in the legislation for approval tomorrow, is the fact that we also were able to bring in financial technology firms or fintech firms who are essentially non-bank lenders, and many of them are internet-based, and they have essentially a propensity to do business loan transactions very quickly. That's essentially what their business model is all about. And they didn't come with the history of working with SBA and working in a more traditional loan environment. So what we found is that some of the fintech lenders were actually very responsive. They didn't have a demand or requirement that there be an existing relationship. And I've heard from a number of small businesses that had good success with the fintech companies. I think the other, you know, point to this in general is this was a completely new program for everybody. You know, SBA had to get rules together. We had to communicate those rules to the banks and the lenders. They had to figure them out and understand what they meant and what we didn't mean. And it was new for the borrowers, too. So, and it was a super heavy press because everybody was looking for money as fast as they could get it. And, you know, that's sort of a perfect storm for making it difficult to operate as smoothly and quickly as we would like to. We're hopeful that having a couple weeks experience behind us and people being able to get some processes in place will make it quicker and easier for this next round. Plus, with this added diversification of lenders who've been participating, we're hopeful that we'll have a much better experience for all of our businesses, including particularly the restaurants and the businesses that don't have that tight relationship with the bank as some others do. But we also do still encourage, as a part of good business practice, that business owners form those great relationships with their bankers, with their attorneys, with their accountants and other support functions so they can be as successful as possible.
Great, Antonio. Thank you. Dr. Sasha, we've also asked both the federal, the SBA, and the states like Virginia to step up assistance in languages other than English, including Mandarin and Cantonese. And Antonio, thank you for the fintech. We will be looking for the fintech lenders in Northern Virginia to help all of our constituents. I had not realized that was a great option. By the way, I wanted to offer one correction. I said, just show up at the emergency room. I'm getting a number of notes saying, please don't just show up at the emergency room. Call ahead. And it might be better to go to the community health center or a neighborhood health center. But let the emergency room know that you're coming. Thank you, Erica. Please.
All right, let's go to Catherine. Catherine's in Alexandria. Go ahead and ask your question live.
Thank you very much. Thank you for doing this, Congressman. I'm actually calling for a neighborhood, a very high-end takeout restaurant that also does catering. They employ and are still working every day to feed us about 10 to 12 people. They have a line of credit, and they have been told that because they have a line of credit, they cannot do anything about this program and get involved in it. Their line of credit is pretty high at 10% interest. Is there anything out there that would allow them to renegotiate and get some help to renegotiate their line of credit during this period of time?
Catherine, that's the first I've ever heard of this question, and that should have no impact whatsoever. So I can't even imagine why that would be. But let me kick it to Antonio, and then let's make sure that we connect with you later. Because it may just be that if, for example, they're with a specific bank, and the bank says, well, you already have a line of credit, we're not going to give you the PPP loan, that's not right. And they could always go to a different bank and get that PPP loan. But Antonio, to you.
I'm in agreement. There's nothing in our regulations or any of our guiding documents. I've not noticed anything ever, even in the legislation, that says you have to use your available resources already. In fact, we waived the credit elsewhere requirement that often is associated with SBA loans. So, you know, if the bank isn't willing to do it and there's others who are willing to provide those funding support, and again, we talked about the fintech companies and others that will be on board this time, you know, there's more than one, you know, one solution to get to where they're trying to go, and they may be encouraged to explore other options.
Catherine, your friend or your best friend just got bad advice. But not surprised, because this is new for everybody, and people are we're learning as we make our mistakes. But we'll be happy to help them find a bank that is eager to lend. By the way, these loans are 100% guaranteed by the federal government. So the banks don't need credit applications. They're not looking for personal signatures, personal guarantees. If it goes bad, it's on the American taxpayer writ large, not on the bank. The bank will get paid.
Congressman, could I add just a little bit on that point? Because I think you made a really powerful point. And, you know, a lot of the underbanked population and others who are maybe not as well endowed with great credit scores and such, this is a program where there's no real credit criteria in terms of, you know, what your credit score is and those kind of things. It's really about, do you have a personnel expense and other related expenses that are approved to operate under the PPP program? And if so, you can apply and get these funds, because again, it's 100% guaranteed. So it's very open to full participation from all parts of the business community.
Thanks, Antonio. Really, really good message. Erica, our next question, please.
Let's go to Kristen in Arlington. Kristen, go ahead and ask your question live.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Congressman Beyer, for holding this town hall. My question is actually to our census representative, and I'm curious about two things, I guess the first of which is, how are we doing with response rates from some of our harder-to-reach populations? I guess I just want to hear a little bit about, A, what the response rates are, and B, if they're not where we'd like them to be. Given where we are with social distancing and, you know, our need to stay apart, how will we reach out to ensure that we do have a response rate from those who are going to need what the census will ultimately give us in terms of funding, probably the most? And then just related to that is, how are we stacking up to our response rates from 2010? Thank you.
And Kevin, are you on the line with
us? Great. Yes, I'm on. Yeah, that's a great question. I'll answer the first one first. We don't really have response rates by communities or demographics. We don't see it that way. We can't view it that way. But what we can do, and what the public can do, they can go on that map that I talked about previously, which is 2020census.gov/response-rate. And then you can go by census tract. And census tract is usually the size of about a neighborhood. So if you know where those hard-to-count populations are, we can go in there and view what the response rate is. In this district, our response rates are high, but we're always working to improve them. One of the things we do is work with our trusted voices in the community. We have partnership staff who live locally. They work with these groups to spread the messaging out. As I said before, the congressman has posted on social media to respond. So we really try to work with everybody in the community to spread the message, and we rely on those trusted voices. As we compare the response to 2010, we're very similar to where we were at this time in 2010.
Which is a good thing, given that we didn't have a pandemic in 2010.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, what was that email, not email, that web address, too, to be able to look it up by census tract?
Yep, the website is 2020census.gov/response-rate. And that has
that actually
the whole country.
Because that actually will be great for our team to look at the specific neighborhoods in Northern Virginia that are undercounted. Because I know all the jurisdictions have their own teams put together to reach out to the undercounted to try to make sure that they're a part of it. So,
yeah. And just to touch a little, sorry, Yeah, as I said, working with the local partners and spreading the message on social media. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. And thank you, Kristen. Erica, back to you.
Let's go to David. David in Arlington, you are live with Congressman Beyer. Go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you, Congressman Beyer, for serving as our member of Congress, especially in such hyper-partisan times, which I know is not an easy job on a day-to-day basis. I'm in a public affairs firm that operates as a sole proprietorship. I frequently do hire 1099 employees, but those are usually on a temporary basis. My company's been operating in Arlington for 5 years now. It seems like all or much of the COVID-19 relief for small business is geared towards those with a payroll. But when Congress shut its doors to the public on March 12th, congressional fly-ins started to become canceled. There's a significant amount of my revenue that comes from training advocates to come up and talk to Capitol Hill. As a sole proprietor, what resources or what help is out there for someone who operates without a payroll like this?
I think both Megan and Antonio may have insights into that. Hey, Antonio, can I start with you? Because you're doing both the economic disaster loans and the payroll protection.
Yes, exactly. So really both programs have a way of helping you. The economic injury disaster loans, I've only said that like 70 times and now I lost the word on it, has the ability to help you with your working capital needs in general. So it doesn't have to be specific to payroll. Essentially what we do to determine how much money you're going to get through this program is we're looking at your annual gross profit. And based on the last approach we were using, it was 2 months of your annual gross profit as essentially a carryover or buffer to help you work through this particular period of time. If you go the economic injury disaster loan route, you don't have a payment for an entire year. It's short-term working capital, so you know, in theory, by the time that year's over, you'll hopefully be back on regular status. If you're not, the loan is set for repayment over 30 years. So short-term working capital loans are never 30 years. That's mortgage territory. So we've tried to make it as affordable as possible so that you can afford to make the payments. There is provisions within the Paycheck Protection Program where you can also identify that you've got 1099 employees, quote-unquote employees, and if you can demonstrate that that's part of your regular, quote-unquote, payroll expense, you can also still go that route as well. And in that case, you also have the ability of having your payroll-related expenses forgiven. So there are two options to still consider.
And then, Megan, is there any perspective from the DEC that would help out a self-employed sole proprietor?
So with the new pandemic unemployment assistance program, sole proprietors can file for unemployment insurance. And we do have partial unemployment insurance, but I just want to make it clear, if you are still bringing in income over $428 per week, then you do not qualify for any type of unemployment insurance, because that's kind of our weekly benefit plus $50. And so, because that's our wiggle room, you don't get really less than $50 on unemployment. And so that's just kind of the criteria in Virginia that you want to. But you can file for partial unemployment and get the extra added dollars as long as you make less than, you can show that there's a loss to your business, and we can do profit loss paperwork that you can submit, but also you have to make sure you don't have income more than that per week.
And David, one other thing is that sole proprietors can get those PPP loans, which by the way are forgivable, for the money that you pay yourself as your payroll. So you may be looking at it on your books as your profit or your operating income, but in fact it's actually functionally your payroll and that counts it for PPP. And thank you for this. You're the first man that's gotten through on this call. 9 straight women. So Erica, back to you.
Well, another woman now. Susie. Susie from Alexandria. You are live with the congressman. You can go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you. Hello, Congressman Beyer, and hello, everyone. My question is simply about if you work for a company and you end up furloughed without pay, but you still are working for the company, would you apply, would you be eligible for any benefits?
Dr. Healy, this is perfect for you, I think.
Yes. So if you are furloughed and not receiving any type of income, so if you're still receiving potential health benefits, we don't count that against your unemployment, that you can check the box lack of work and apply for unemployment benefits as well. When you say you're still working for the company, that just means that you're going to probably come back, right? So make sure that when you're separated from the company for temporary, that you still can't do work on the side without getting paid. That's against Virginia law. Just making sure that you're not doing side work, but just not getting paid for it.
No, I mean, currently
you should qualify for it.
But if I get furloughed without pay, but I'm still tethered to the company with health insurance, I don't know whether it's available to me to apply for unemployment.
Yes. So, yeah, you definitely would qualify and eligible for unemployment insurance. I just make sure we do get questions about I'm not working, but they're still making me work, but they're not paying me. We do get that question actually more than you would think. So it's making sure. But yes, if you are temporarily laid off, which you should begin paid for your work, if you're temporarily laid off and furloughed, yes, you do qualify for unemployment insurance benefits.
So that's real loyalty when you're working, you don't get paid at all. By the way, Susie, hang on to that health insurance, but the number I read this afternoon is 9.2 million Americans have lost their health insurance during the crisis because they lost their job and health insurance has gone away. One more reason why we need to really rethink how health insurance is provided in this country. Erica, back to you.
Let's go to Pam. Pam in Alexandria, you're live. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, hi. I've submitted an economic injury disaster loan on April 6th, and I have was told that I would be hearing something the following week. And I was able to get a human being on the phone today for the first time, and they said that there's a glitch in the portal, so my application is probably in there somewhere, but they can't view it, and they're working on this portal glitch. And meanwhile, I'm trying to make decisions on furloughs and payments. And is there something that you can tell me about a timing on this when I might hear something?
We have Antonio online with us now just for that.
Mm-hmm. Sure thing. Yeah, sorry to hear of your situation. If I heard right, you applied on April 6th. Did I hear that correct? Hopefully so. So our original estimate was about 3 weeks for a loan decision turnaround time on the economic injury disaster loans. And, of course, that was based on our typical experience and our ability to ramp up with new people for what are normally regional disasters. Think of the hurricanes that come through the Gulf States, for example. We've never actually had a track record that we could even point back to that said, this is what happens when we have an entire country who's available for these loans all at the same time. So it was our best guesstimate, and at this point, we're starting to get more decisions through. I noticed that just this past week, we've gotten a number of declinations that have come through, as well as I've been hearing from more and more businesses that are getting their approvals now where they're further along in the process. So it's, regretful that we couldn't process them quicker, but I know that our team is doing everything they can. We did go through some systems adjustments and some modernization and refinement of our overall program and approach to reviewing and analyzing the application so that we get them through quicker. And I think, kind of slowed us down for a minute, but it's helping to speed us up at this point. And I think the fact that you can get through to the call center line much quicker now is part of the indication that we're getting through some of the backlog. So hopefully in the next few days to a week or so, you'll be able to get more definitive information on where you stand with the request.
Thanks, Antonio. And Sam, you also can we can open a case for you with through our office. let me give you our district director's email address. It's noah@mail.house.gov. And Noah leads a terrific team of folks who just do casework all day long for you. And they have good relationships with the folks at the SBA. And Antonio, I can't tell you how happy I am that you've been here tonight to help us with this. So with you, Megan, and Kevin, you've offered a lot of answers. So
we're all in it together. So
you sure are.
Well,
Erica, back to you.
One final question. This is our last question for the evening. This is Kristen. Kristen, you're live. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, so thank you so much for addressing your constituents in this manner. I am a federal employee, and I was looking at the guidance that was recently released through OMB and OPM that seems to show this administration's urge to demonstrate that everybody can get back to work. I guess my question is, and my fear is, that the administration will try and force federal employees back to work before it's safe. And I wanted to know whether you had any thoughts on that.
I do, Kristen. And we've been pushing OPM to maximize social distancing since the start of the crisis. I think I was the lead author on a letter 6 or 7 weeks ago about making sure that every available federal employee could telework, if at all possible. I know there's a bunch of rumblings this afternoon about Attorney General Bill Barr forcing people to come back to work. There was an interesting thing I read early this morning that American people are trusting their governors by a factor of like 5 to 1 over trusting the federal government in terms of social distancing, self-isolation, when it's time to open up the economy again. We do not want you going back early. I mentioned an hour ago that every one of the economists I've talked to, these are Nobel Prize winners and, chairs of economics faculties at some of the best universities in the world, and everyone says you cannot open the economy until you get control of the virus. And getting control of the virus, first and foremost, is going to be dependent on getting the testing necessary to find out who has it, who's contagious, who's immune, and the like. So I just promise you that I, along with all the members of Congress in this area, I think nationally, will be fighting a premature reopening of the federal government, of taking you. By the way, I'm sure you're working just as hard at home as you do at work. At least I know all of us are. And thank you for serving us. A factoid for those of you, the year I was born, we had 5 federal employees for every 100 U.S. citizens. Today we have 2 for every 100. We're getting more done with fewer federal employees than ever before. Erica, thank you for guiding us through that time. I really want to thank Dr. Megan Healy for being with us, being the Virginia's chief workforce advisor. I know Governor Northam relies on you, Megan, very closely. And Antonio Doss, our district director for the SBA, thank you for being here. It's just proof of how critical the SBA is in these times, and thank you for, I'm sure, your endless weeks. And Kevin, I know we've screwed up your census as much as we can with this coronavirus, but thank you for being here with us and answering our questions. And we will try to make sure that the 8th District of Northern Virginia has the highest response rate of any place in Virginia, if not the country. And thank all of you for being part of this. I've been sending frequent newsletters, lots of resources. We will continue to do that. We're trying to put as much information as we can, including pages on unemployment, direct payments, small business assistance. So go to the website, buyer.house.gov/coronavirus, and you'll see everything that's there. And finally, well, I hope, or maybe I don't hope, that you saw Mark Warner's video about how to make a tuna fish melt. The best part of the video was watching him wash his hands with soap for 20 seconds. So please do that and avoid close contact with people that are sick. And avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. It's a great piece of wisdom that it's really difficult to touch your face when you have a glass of wine in each hand. And clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces. So once again, please stay home. we've flattened the curve quite a bit. Right now, the University of Washington model predicts national deaths of about 67,000, Virginia deaths of about 700. Those are tragedies, huge tragedies, but they're much smaller numbers than they could have been without all of your discipline. So thank you for making the short-term sacrifice for the long-term benefit of all of us. And I look forward to talking to you and seeing you again soon. Thank you. Thanks, Megan. Thanks, Antonio. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Erica. And good night to all of you.
Thank you, Congressman. You can also call the Congressman's office. Again, that phone number is 202-225-4376 for legislative issues and 703-658-5403 for constituent services. You can send the Congressman a message online at buyer.house.gov/contact. You can also follow him for regular updates on Facebook and Twitter at Rep. Don Beyer. Thank you, everyone, for joining tonight, and have a great evening.